Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Remember Palestine with me, Lauren Booth. This week, a dreadful precedent was set. The brutal murder of a European solidarity activist, Vittorio Arrigoni, in the Gaza Strip. For years, internationals working in Gaza have done so with confidence, both in the people there and in the authorities' ability to ensure their safety. Are those days now over? I'll be talking with a member of the Free Gaza movement about their response to events seemingly aimed at stopping new arrivals to Gaza. In the meantime, bombs rain down from Israel onto homes in the Gaza Strip, and children are kidnapped by Israeli forces in the West Bank. We will explore the meaning of collective punishment in Palestine. But first, let's take a look at this report.
April has been the bloodiest month so far in the Gaza Strip since Israel's 22-day war. The latest Israeli escalation resulted in the killing of 19 Palestinians and the injury of 68, including women and children. The Hamas government declared a state of emergency.
In the interior ministry in Gaza, actually, we have different levels of the emergency plans. However, the situation is and the condition is, we give the orders for our people to implement any of these emergency plans. We had give orders for the highest level of emergency plans, and we've all our security agencies, police and civil defense and internal security had a good job, actually, and this is our job to serve and save our people.
Recent Israeli attacks have stoked fears that Israel will launch a ground invasion of Gaza, as it did in 2008, which killed at least 1,400 Palestinians, including women and children.
Israel is abusing our people because we are unarmed and we want Arabs to show more support and stand by us in a tangible way, similar to the way that the whole world is standing by Libya. But unfortunately, we don't have oil, and that is our weak point. We hope that Arab countries and Arab leaders show strong support for us in case another war takes place, God forbid.
During the war in Gaza, a total of 48 people from the Samouni family were killed by Israeli forces. Now, they only hope to never relive the horrors of war again.
In the media, Arab countries say they are standing by the Palestinian people, but in reality, we don't feel their support. We want them to stand by us and stop the Israeli from killing us. Many children lost their fathers, and they only know them by pictures on the wall.
I hope to live my childhood like other children around the world and play with my toys. I also hope that the Israelis don't return to Gaza anymore.
Israel's war efforts received a public relations boost on April 1st, when Richard Goldstone, the author of a United Nations report on Israel's 2008-2009 assault on Gaza, renounced his conclusion that Israel intentionally targeted civilians. Most Gazans are speaking now of their bitter anger at Israel and their deep resentment at the apathy of the Arab world, which failed to halt the destruction and the killing. Ashraf Shannon, reporting for Remember Palestine, Gaza.
Well, to talk more about these recent attacks is Munir Nusseiba of the Camden Aboudis Friendship Association and of the Al-Quds Human Rights Clinic. Welcome to Remember Palestine.
You.
Let's talk a little bit about the West Bank for the minute, because when we consider collective punishment, often we talk about Gaza and people being imprisoned by barbed wire and by an obvious siege. But in the West Bank right now, there are refugee camps undergoing what your clinic might describe as collective punishment. Describe Al-Orta. What is that?
Collective punishment. Collective punishment is a...
Well, I meant actually, sorry, Al-Orta refugee camp.
Awarta.
What is going on there?
Awarta
yeah.
village. It's basically Awarta is a village of around 6,000 Palestinian citizens. And it is just unlucky of being very close to the settlement, Itamar, the illegal settlement, where five members of the settlement were murdered in March. And the Israeli occupation army has been invading this village several times since March on a daily basis, arresting children, women, men, old elderly people. There's this story of a 70 of an 80 year old man and a 70 year old woman, his wife. They pushed her violently, and the man was taken to prison and asked, did you murder these five people in the settlement? And the same has happened to, I believe, most of, a large number of the of the residents of this village.
Do the residents understand why they're being targeted? Is the reason that the soldiers give is that they're on a routine investigation, a murder investigation?
Exactly. This is the announced goal, is that they are investigating. But have you ever heard of an investigation where a whole village is being investigated? Every person is a suspect. Can every person of a village be suspect, if a suspect of murder? Of course not. Can a 15-year-old child, as well as an 80-year-old man, be a suspect of this murder? Can hundreds of people, hundreds have been so far arrested? This cannot be. These people are not suspects, and this is the truth. What the Israeli army is doing now, the occupation, is that they are punishing this whole village just because, apparently, vengeance. And there are also reports that say that the actual goal is for these people to leave their village and go somewhere else, so that the settlement will be safe forever.
Let me just ask about, there are reports, for example, I've got one here from the International Solidarity Movement, who have activists in this village saying, for example, Hala, age 6, was kicked by soldiers as they raided her home. Other reports of things like school books being torn up, sugar ruined by oil. These aren't just searches, are they?
They are not. They are certainly punishment for the whole public. And I do not understand why they are consistent on doing, on punishing the whole population. But this is very consistent, not only in Awarta. You can see it in Awarta. You can see that the whole wall and the whole checkpoint system in the West Bank is also collective punishment. You can see the same policy in Gaza. When they put a price tag, if a missile goes out of Gaza, then we will decrease the amount of food and medicine that gets into Gaza. They call it price tag.
Who calls it price tag?
The Israeli government, the Israeli officials. This is a stated policy. So when, how can this is illegal in international law, and both Israeli Palestinian human rights organizations and international human rights organizations apply the same standards. However, the Israeli occupation institutions do not recognize that even human rights law and international humanitarian law, which rules how an occupying power is working in an occupied territory, has to function. They don't recognize that it is even applicable. So the standards that the occupation uses when it treats the Palestinian civilians, including children and all of the others, are not the same as they would treat, for example, their own populations, or they would treat other populations.
So different treatment, not sticking to any sorts of rules of investigation or rules of engagement, even acceptable on an international level. Thank you very much.
This is institutionalized. I would add one thing. That, I'll just give an example.
Well, I'm afraid we don't have time for that example, but thanks very much for coming in today. Well, let's talk now about the killing of the renowned activist Vittorio Arrigoni. I'm being joined now by Ken O'Keefe, down the line from Gaza. Ken is an Irish-American activist. He's been in Gaza for the last few months and witnessed the events that have been unfolding since last night. Ken, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, Lauren.
Okay, Ken, obviously, can you describe the feeling in Gaza on the news of Vittorio, we can call him Vic's, murder?
Well, you know, the amount of apologies from the Palestinian people is just continuous. You know, everybody of sound mind agrees this is a tragedy on all levels, and, you know, the people here don't deserve to be in any way related to what's happened to Vic. But the people that did this obviously have nothing to do with Palestine or Islam, that's for sure.
Can we talk a little bit about Victor's work? What was he actually doing in the Gaza Strip?
Well, Vic was working with the ISM, and he went out on the boats with fishermen many times. In fact, he was kidnapped by the Israelis once and taken to jail and roughed up a bit. As you know, he was on the first pre-Gaza mission, which arrived in August of 2008, and I was with Vic a couple months back when we went to the buffer, so-called buffer zone, and the Israelis fired at us. So he was always trying to do what he could to help expose the truth and shield the people in the best way that he could.
There's been a press conference given by the Hamas leaders in Gaza saying that this terrible crime in no way reflects the situation for visitors to the Gaza Strip. Have you got anything to say about that? You're there. What's the feeling?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been here nearly 5 months this time around, and I've walked the streets freely, and, you know, if there's anything that can be said about the situation, it really is quite remarkable. I mean, I was born in America. The people here are not ignorant of the fact that America is funding their occupation and supporting Israel hand and foot. And yet a guy like me can walk the streets, and it's really much safer in general than you would be in many major cities in America. So it is really quite incredible considering the amount of injustice that the people have experienced here. And what has happened with the killing of Vic is just not indicative at all of what is the reality for people here. It's really an incredibly hospitable and generous people, and they really do everything they can to take care of you.
Just finally, what sort of gatherings and what sort of message is it hoped from the Gazan people that will come from Vic's time with them?
Well, they all express their deepest love and sympathy for the family and for all of the people that support the Palestinian cause, and they want people to know that this is not Palestine. What has happened is an aberration, and it has nothing to do with the people of Palestine nor their struggle. They have a deep love and respect for all of us who support them in their struggle, and you know, this cannot be characterized as a Palestinian action. Those acted in great favor to the Israelis. Whether they knew it or not, they gave a great gift to the Israelis, and we have to consider them, the Israelis, as a prime suspect in what happened in that.
Ken O'Keefe in Gaza, thanks very much for joining me. Thank you. Well, since the Solidarity activist's murder, Gaza has been in mourning. It's hard to shock the people there, but this death has done so. Here's footage from the night of the murder. Well, as we heard from Ken O'Keefe there in Gaza, people continue going to Palestine to show their solidarity. Our next guest is Ali Akbar Ali, a university lecturer who recently accompanied 5 students from De Montfort University in Leicester to the West Bank, where they experienced the life of students there. Welcome back to Remember Palestine, Ali.
Thank you.
First of all, tell us about the twinning project and the point of taking students to the West Bank.
This is one of the most important projects that we as a university and student union we are working on, because it's an extension of the Palestinian human right. The right of education is enshrined into all international law, and it gives the students in Palestine and the people of Palestine another extension to their freedom. And without education, it's a bit harder to achieve their freedom and their prosperity. And that's one of the major issues for them.
And what do you think the students from Leicester in the Midlands of Great Britain learnt from their time at Al Najjar University in Nablus?
Well, I can tell you when we came back, all of the students changed, including myself. I thought personally that I knew what was happening in Palestine, but until I went there and see the people, eat with the people, feel what they feel living behind the walls, behind the checkpoints, we learned a lot. And then when we came back, we all said that we will not stop fighting for them. It makes sense and it makes a difference to them as well. What they are looking for is not charity, it's not money, it's not the scholarship, but that friendship that gives them hope, that people from outside Palestine are thinking of them and will be helping them.
You know, students have been getting together to rally and calling for a unity government. When you were there, did you feel that there was an action happening amongst Al Najjar students, a politicising action?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what we hear over here in the West is basically Hamas and Fatah are not working together and they can't unite. But on the ground, let me tell you, everybody I've spoken to, whether they are from Fatah, PLO or Hamas, they are all friends, they're all speaking to each other and they're all demanding political unity. It's only at the higher echelon of the political scene in Palestine that people are not agreeing, but on the ground, everybody agrees that there need to be political unity and Palestinians people are one. It's not divided between Hamas and Fatah or Gaza and the West Bank.
Does your twinning project have a website?
Yes, we do have a Facebook page. We have the student union site as well, which do tells our activities
and
what we are doing.
And how would people find you?
They can find me on Facebook, or if they wish, I can leave my details with.
So, but they go to Leicester Twinning, do they? On Facebook.
It will be De Montfort University Palestine Peace Society.
Okay, thanks very much for joining me. Hamas officials have given press briefings since Victor's death. They are concerned that this murder was intended to deter activists from going to Gaza in solidarity. And specifically, they mentioned the flotilla being prepared for this May. To talk more about this, we're joined down the line from the USA now by Janet Cobran, who has been involved in the flotilla plans. Janet, welcome to Remember Palestine on this very sad day.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yes. First of all, Janet, what movements has Israel been making to stop the next flotilla on a political level?
Well, there have been a number of things. For example, Israel has been pressuring the UN to stop the flotilla. Goldstone has probably been pressured by Israel to retract his own UN report. Well, it's not just his, it's a committee, but was given his name. And the kidnapping and killing of Vic, they probably are trying to pressure activists to stop their work, and it will not work. Activists will continue with more resolve than ever.
So I think what you're saying here, Janet, is that in the activism community, there's a disbelief that Victor Arrigoni, who came across to Gaza on the first Free Gaza mission in 2008, could have been killed by a Palestinian. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's not clear why he was killed, who killed him. It's possible that there's elements inside Gaza that are extreme and want to get rid of internationals, or it might be some false flag operation also to get rid of internationals from Gaza so that Israel can do whatever it wants to do, whatever it has been doing.
Janet, there's been news of Turkey having been pressured by Israeli ministers to withdraw support for the flotilla. Italy, Silvio Berlusconi has said he does not support such actions. First of all, what's your response to those efforts?
Well, again, these are tactics by probably Israel and maybe also the United States to try to stop the flotilla by any means possible. It's also possible, well, the flotilla will go, and it will either be stopped by Israel like the last one, or they maybe even will let the flotilla go into Gaza. It can range anywhere in between, but we just don't know what will happen.
Today, as people share their memories of Victor, have you at the Free Gaza Movement had anybody saying that they're now unwilling to go to Gaza, or that there's a distrust of the situation in the Gaza Strip?
Among the fellow Palestine solidarity activists that I'm around, that I'm in contact with, there has not been a single one who will not continue their work because of this.
Well, that seems a fitting memorial to Vittorio. Janet Coburn, thank you very much for joining us from the US. Well, across the world, activists continue to support Palestine in their own ways. Let's take a look at how.
Protesters stormed an Adidas sports shop in central London to condemn their sponsorship of the Jerusalem Marathon. The marathon passed through Israeli-controlled West Jerusalem and the illegal settlement of Pisgat Zev. Last Friday, on the day of the marathon, activists of the Rome-Palestine Solidarity Network organised similar boycott action in the Adidas store in Via del Corso in Rome's historic centre. Students in Boston disrupted a panel discussion of six members of the Israeli Knesset at Brandeis University. The action targeted MK Avi Dechter, who is wanted for crimes against humanity and violations of the Geneva Convention. When Dechter spoke, a dozen members of the Brandeis Students for Justice in Palestine demanded that he turn himself in to authorities. They ended their disruption by chanting in Hebrew, "Don't worry, Avi Dechter, we'll meet you again in The Hague." A transport and waste management company is no longer in the running for a £1 billion contract after protests by pro-Palestinian campaigners. Activists spoke out against Veolia due to its involvement in the building and operation of a new tramway linking illegal settlements in East Jerusalem with Israel. This is the latest in a series of setbacks for the French company, which has failed to win a string of other public contracts in France, England, Wales, Ireland, and Australia.
And that's all for this week on Remember Palestine. I leave you now with some images of the activist Vittorio Arrigoni, the bravest man I've ever met. Goodbye.